creation.
Curiosity.
The next idea.
We weren't setting out to do these huge things. We were just starting with solving a problem we hoped a few other people had.
You know, we're always hearing about Silicon Valley startups, and we get the idea that entrepreneurship is thriving in America. But the reality is, U.S. entrepreneurship has been on a pretty steep decline for 30 years now. The Next Idea team got to wondering about that, so we asked Stuart Thornhill to write an essay about entrepreneurship. He's a professor who teaches entrepreneurship. So let's talk about this downward trend. This is based on census data, but what does this trend really mean? What's happening that we're seeing a downturn in entrepreneurship?
There are actually two data points that are really important in this conversation. One is the rate of business closures. So every year, year in and year out, and again, this goes back for decades, roughly 10% of companies, of businesses, shut their doors every year. And that's pretty steady. Sometimes it's 9.5, sometimes it's 10.2, but call it 10% is the average closure rate of businesses. Now, historically, the rate of business startups or the number of companies that came into being within a year has always been up into the teens. So even if 10% were closing, there were already going to be 15 or 16% that were opening, so we had net growth. In the past 2 years, those lines have crossed for the first time. So in 2013, and I expect we'll see again in 2014, while the closure rate stayed where it was at 10%, the startup rate has dropped into the eights and nines. And so that means we're actually losing companies across the entire economy. And because the companies that are starting tend to be smaller than the ones that are starting, that also represents net job loss in the small business sector. So a couple of really disturbing issues there. Now, why is it happening? I think there are a couple of trends that we can point to straight away, and I think there's more to be learned. One of those trends is the decline in personal savings rates. If you're going to start a business, or I'm going to start a business, we usually need a little bit of money to get that storefront rented or buy some inventory or work on our prototype in our garage, whatever we're doing. And that takes some money. As individuals' personal savings rates have gotten lower and lower, fewer people have that nest egg set aside that they can invest in starting their business. And the next place that people go after their own personal savings to start a company is family and friends. Well, chances are your family and friends are in the same situation you're in because we tend to have family and friends in the same socioeconomic group.
And bank loans are tight these days.
Banks don't lend
for startups
dreams.
Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, they lend against collateral, and if you don't have something that you can mortgage against, you're not going to get money from a bank.
So we're seeing this trend going. We're seeing this entrepreneurial trend going downward. But why should we care? Why should society at large really care about that? Especially if, you know, I have no intention of opening my own business anyway.
I think there's at least two reasons, both of which are important. One, every big company, and big companies, by the way, provide the lion's share of jobs in this country. But every big company started as a startup at some point, whether it's IBM or Hewlett-Packard or Facebook only a few years ago. These companies started in somebody's dorm room or garage or backyard. And without a continual resupply of those startups to replace the ones that are leaving the economy as they become outdated, their technology is no longer competitive, right? This continual turnover. Without a steady supply and a growing supply of new companies, it's going to be very difficult to grow the economy and grow the level of employment. And those are critical. And the second is that's where innovation comes from. Those big companies are very good at a lot of things, but coming up with the next new great innovation, those usually come from the entrepreneurial startups. And so whether it's high-level economic growth or what's the next best thing going to be, you really want to look to the startups for both of those.
You, in your essay, say there's a couple of different points that need to be established in getting people into an entrepreneurial mindset. It seems to me that if you're without capital, getting to an entrepreneurial mindset isn't really going to get you very far. You've got to have more than inspiration and a little bit of knowledge. You've got to have cash.
Well, this is really where it comes back to how do we teach entrepreneurship? Because one of the fundamental principles we teach is really starting out with the tiniest little increment that you can. Just take that idea, for example, and share it with a friend or a coworker. I often say the most risky time for any new business venture is when it's just an idea in your head. You haven't told your spouse or your best friend or your coworker about it. It's an idea in your head. You haven't done anything. It can't be any riskier than that. as soon as you share it with one person and get some feedback, hey, that's a great idea, or hey, that would be even better if, and you get a suggestion to it, now it's a better idea. You've validated it with at least one person, and you've begun the gradual and inexorable process of de-risking the idea. Because I think another one of the great myths about entrepreneurs is that they love risk. They hate risk. They want to take risk away from their business as much as they can. And so we try to show people how they can, in small little steps, little increments, try something, make a little something, sell a little something. Just take these little steps, these little experiments, learn from them, improve the product, and do it in a way that doesn't require a huge amount of money, but just be patient and let it grow and see where it takes you. And I think that's to use the phrase mindset in this context, it's really having that belief that it's okay to try, it's okay to fail, it's okay to modify the idea. You don't have to stick to your original concept, but be willing to take that feedback and to try to make it better.
So if we want to encourage that kind of entrepreneurship in my town or my neighborhood or maybe just my neighbor, how would I go about doing that? I mean, is it just a matter of saying, yeah, Frank, I think that's a great idea. You ought to try a sample of that and see what happens? Or is it more than that? Should it be more formal?
It should absolutely not be any more formal than it needs to be. We've done an exercise in the classroom for a number of years where students would have $10 and a week to see how much money they could make. And one of the best teams I worked with, I think they ended up making about $750 profit in a week. And what they did simply was they took their $10 and they bought a couple little potting plants. So this was around Easter. And some soil, a little seed pack, and some cellophane to make it look pretty. So instead of parents or grandparents or uncles giving chocolate at Easter, which greater emphasis on health was important, this was a chance to plant some seeds, some springtime seeds, and grow a little plant. And it cost them $2.50 worth of material, and they sold it for 8 or 10. And so for everyone they sold, they then took all of their profits and bought. The next day they had 10 planters to sell. And the next day they had 40. And they did that every day for a week. And every person on the team, it was their job to take their share of the little planters and sell them. And that meant knocking on doors, standing in the parking lot at Home Depot. And what they all came back with was this newly discovered ability that they could actually sell something they'd made. And the transformation, even though it sounds trivial, was pretty extraordinary because they then saw themselves as entrepreneurs, and that's a game changer is how you see yourself.
You gave a nice example in the entrepreneurs class in your in college, but if you don't have that kind of setting, how might you do that in your local community? Do you suggest to the scout leader or to maybe the Sunday school teacher, hey, here's a side project you could be doing with the kids? How do you do that in a community?
I think those are two great suggestions, and they both have the beauty that you already have the group organized. They're coming together at a time and place. They're expecting to collaborate and cooperate on projects where they're learning together. So you already have the perfect setting, whether, again, it's Boy Scouts, Girl Guides, Sunday school. Any of those kinds of environments are ready-made for this. But just as easily, you can craft one. Rent a room at a library or community center. Stick up a couple of posters or send something out on a Twitter feed or an email thread, invite people in, and right away you have all the ingredients is people with a willingness to learn, a little bit of time and effort to put into it, and little, if any, money, because it's really about trying to pull together what you can. One of the other examples I often use in the classroom is when you're making dinner. It's very rare that you put on a dinner party where you go out and you have this long ingredient list and this huge number of guests and this big elaborate procedure where you're trying to prepare a meal. Most times what you're trying to do is go home, you open your fridge, you look at what's in there, and you see what you can assemble given what you have at your disposal. And for starting entrepreneurs, that's where we suggest that they start is think about what can you do? What are the skills that you have? What do you know how to do? What do your friends know how to do within the group of five or six of you maybe getting together as a team? What are some, your superpowers, right? What are the skills that you have that you can use to make something that someone else would value? And start there. Start with what you know.
Now, some people are more risk averse than others. Either they just feel like they can't risk any money or they simply don't want to fail. People don't like that feeling. How does failure play into entrepreneurship?
Well, first of all, it's central. It's one of those interesting things that I think more and more now, particularly if you go to places like Silicon Valley, In some cases, they don't take you seriously until you've failed a couple of times. Hmm. Somebody shows up and have a couple of failed businesses on their resume. That's not a black mark. That's a signal that, okay, now you probably know what you're doing. You've figured it out through those failures. So failure in and of itself, it shouldn't be considered a stigma or an impediment to going forward. It's natural, and failure rates are such that it's in some cases almost inevitable. And I won't downplay the fact that failing sucks. It is not fun. It's emotionally draining. It is very hard to live with when it's happening. And this is where this question of mindset comes in, because the two dominant types of mindsets that we've learned about are those that will embrace failure as an opportunity to improve, learn from the failure, move forward, next time around, do a better job, versus failure as that's just define the limits of how far I can go and I can go no further. And that's a critical mindset. A mindset isn't hardwired any more than entrepreneurial ability is hardwired. It's the kind of thing you can work on and educate yourself around and try to reposition through experience. But approaching failure, and I mean even small failures, setbacks, somebody didn't like that version of a product or they didn't like it in that color, don't treat it as a I'm not good enough to succeed signal. Treat it as a what can I learn from this little experiment and make it better the next time.
Stuart Thornhill is a professor of business administration at the Ross School of Business. He's also the executive director of the Samuel Zell and Robert H. Lurie Institute for Entrepreneurial Studies. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We'd like to end each conversation on the next idea with a question to discuss. What can people do in their own neighborhoods or in their own communities to encourage entrepreneurship? I mean, what's worked for you? Let us know your thoughts in the comments under the essay at our website, michiganradio.org, or on Michigan Radio's Facebook page, or on Twitter, at NextIdeaMI.
Support for the Next Idea on Stateside comes from Michigan Economic Development Corporation, committed to marketing Michigan to drive job growth and investment in our communities. MichiganBusiness.org.